Register Cliff. Setting. Two men are seated around a campfire, roasting some meat on sticks. A third stands behind, sideways, etching his name into the cliff face with a small knife. All three don western outfits of pioneers of the 1840s. June 21st, 1848. Far from civilization stands a rock cliff. The cliff, known simply as Register Cliff, overlooks a lush valley at its base that provides a resting place for wagons heading westward toward the setting sun and Oregon. It is here that Mr. H. H. Wirtz is carving his name into the face of the cliff. The smell wafting up from the pot over his friend's campfire reminds him of luxuries of home-cooked meals and wood for a campfire. But the stark contrast of reality is buffalo dung for fuel and a steady of diet of beans, beans, and more beans. He contemplates the other hardships and trials through which he has already come on this journey. First, there was the agony of leaving his friends and families behind in St. Louis, Missouri. He assured them at the time he would return someday, but that was months and months and many miles ago. With the wonders, challenges, and hardships he has seen since then, he has doubts that he will ever see them again, and that grieves him to no end. Second came the tiresome crossing of the prairie. Even though the wagon train followed the wide Platte River, it was usually dry, or more often the consistency of thick mud. Clean water became scarce. He wonders how any woman or child could survive that part of the trip. Heaven knows it was difficult enough for a man. Next came the uphill climb when the wagon train veered away from the Platte, following the North Platte northwestwardly. The group was assured by the guides that this was a shorter and safer way, but as the drying winds continued to send the sand and dust into every crevice of a man's body and in his gear, the daily routine of walking became almost unbearable, even to Wirtz. He considers himself a hardy man, but wiping sand from his face, his neck, the cuffs of his sleeves, and his ankles at the end of each day was a rougher time than he had ever anticipated. Chapped lips, chapped hands, even his face was raw from the constant burn of sun and flying sand. After many days of climbing with leg muscles that cramped at every step, the expedition came to Windlass Hill. His legs were given a rest only to use his arms as stabilizers on ropes as the wagons were slowly and carefully lowered down the side of this towering prominence. Some men in his party complained openly, only to be rebuked with broad smiles that this was the best way down to Ash Hollow, water, and a tolerably good camping area with ash trees for firewood and plentiful shade. After 2 months of nothing on the horizon but blue sky, to look at a shrub would be a relief. Plentiful water for a drink and a bath would be nothing but pure ecstasy. For the next 2 days, the train rested, but as they did so, they became the object of curiosity and interest of the local tribe of wretched little people. Some of the natives came just close enough to look, perhaps to laugh or to mock. Others more blatantly entered camp, asking for handouts of food, alcohol, or supplies, but giving little in return. They seemed to expect royal treatment and respect. Wirtz discovered, though, they could be rude, nasty, and even dangerous when intoxicated. The pioneers gave what they could, trying to keep things peaceful. On the trail again, they soon saw the famous Courthouse Rock and Chimney Rock on the horizon. At first, Wirtz laughed within himself. He had heard that these monuments were well worth seeing for their sheer size alone, but they didn't impress him much the first day, or the second, or the third. But on the fourth day, when the group camped at the base of Chimney Rock, he was awestruck that such a huge finger pointing heavenward in the middle of nowhere must surely be a sign from God. But what it meant, he had no idea. With Courthouse Rock looming behind and the ominous citadel of Scott's Bluff ahead, what could be next? Judgment Day? 2 days' journey brought the group to Scott's Bluff, an imposing barrier that stretched from south to north as far as the eye could see. But his confidence in their guides was reconfirmed when they safely took the train through the middle, on a trail that wagon ruts had clearly marked from many travelers who had gone before them. More than a week later, when Wirtz had given up hope of seeing any white man ever again besides those of his own entourage, they came upon Fort Laramie, nestled next to a river shaded with weeping willow and Osage orange trees. The fort brought peace to the weary travelers. They rested and resupplied. Wagon wheels were repaired. Provisions were restocked. Water barrels were refilled. Unnecessary items such as mirrors, books, furniture, and fine clothes were traded for cornmeal, salt, flour, salt pork, coffee, and gunpowder. It was evident that this fort prospered as a trading post with both the Indians and the pioneers. The location, the supplies, someone knew what they were doing. Wirtz only wished that he could be as confident of success when he reached the end of his journey. After leaving Laramie and continuing westward, the Rocky Mountains soon came into view. Although still miles away, Wirtz now understood the magnitude of the many vistas seen from far across the prairie. The brilliant starkness of the clear, crisp morning sun reflecting off the whiteness of rocks pointing skyward. The intensity of the noonday heat that bore down upon a man, heedless of his station in life or an intent of his heart. The subtle shades of blue and purple of the mountains and shadow of the sun set slowly behind them. The orb of light changing the sky from blue to pink, orange to magenta, and then one last fiery bit of red before slipping into the darkness that was never truly black, as a myriad of stars filled the sky with light almost as bright as day. Yes, Wirtz is weary. He is anxious about his future, but already he has come to love this land that is so different from anything and everything he has ever known. As he finishes carving his name into the stone, he wonders how many more miles he will travel before finding his promised land. He wonders how many more will travel where he has trod, and he wonders if his descendants will make the journey too, sincerely and honestly reflecting on their past and looking forward to the future with the hope of a new day, a new world, and a new path before them. He does not know his future, but he renews his hope that it will be bright. Historical notes and teaching tips. Often we peer at graffiti painted, scratched, or carved on our walls, picnic tables, or landscapes, and cry out in disgust that so much defacing of property occurs in modern society. Yet this despoilment, given time, becomes historical record, often not the record we desire to leave, but nevertheless a testimony that one day might shed light on the character of today's society. So, too, at Registered Cliff, Wyoming, where many years ago immigrants left their mark on the side of a sheer sandstone face. These simple carvings leave a faint witness of our forefathers' struggles as they made their way westward to start a fresh life. Often names appear from the shadows of early evening, sometimes a faint date, and at times a message of importance to a long-forgotten person, soon to follow this long-ago graffiti artist perpetrator. Inspired by an afternoon searching, interpreting, and finding the name Wirtz etched into a rock face at a small Wyoming state park, Register Cliff tells the personal story of an immigrant struggle along the Oregon Trail many years past. I have visited the site found along Wirtz's route and stood aghast in the shadows, crags, and under the burning midday heat, imagining the suffering that pioneers faced without the comforts of an automobile affords the modern traveler. As with the Lewis and Clark Trail, scholars may read many accounts, articles, and descriptions about life and sights along the Oregon Trail, but can only truly appreciate the majesty by visiting the monuments, parks, and historical sites, dotting the landscapes and vistas. Though each site has a local bias and story to tell, a visit to any will bring a sampling of the pioneers' struggle that challenged each during the 1840s until the coming of the railroad in the 1870s that virtually closed the Overland Trail to Oregon and the West.